Good morning. We are in the middle of a series discussing the idea of Numbers chapter 14, in which God finally, from dealing with the people of Israel, has had enough. The concept is there is a moment in time in which God's mercy and grace towards the Israelite nation finally reached a boiling point, and if from that point forward they no longer receive the blessing, the promise of going to the promised land. And so in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul makes the same insight in which we as Christians have a promised land awaiting us. And if we're not careful and not learning from the examples of the past, then we too can reach a point to where we're not going to be going to the promised land of heaven. And so we've been going through the moments in time in which the Israelites put God to the test, and when they failed to pass the test themselves of faithfulness. The first one we covered last week was, of course, the famous Red Sea crossing moment. They were backed up against the Red Sea. They saw the Egyptian army coming at them from the front, and they didn't trust in God to deliver them from that particular moment. And because of that, they failed that moment out of frailty, of weakness, of human mindsets, and of course that was a moment in which they did not pass the test of faithfulness. We have two in front of us today. We have the bitter waters of Marah and the lack of bread, which seems kind of simplistic. The idea of not having food or water, of course it's essential for life, but not trusting in God to provide that for you, that's the moment where they failed the test. So let's turn in our Bibles to Exodus chapter 15. This is the chapter directly after the Red Sea crossing. You have verses 1 through 21 being the song of the Red Sea, or song of Moses, praising God for that deliverance. And then almost immediately after that, when it comes to the narrative, we have their next failing. So Exodus chapter 15, let's begin reading in verse 22. Then Moses made Israel set out from the Red Sea, and they went into the wilderness of Shur. They went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. So we kind of have a moment here where we step back and kind of try to imagine what that must have been like. They passed through the Red Sea. They saw the Egyptian army defeated by the waters that were there. They take a moment to praise God through Moses in song. And then they go 3 days later and there's still no water. So we know that we can go about 3 days without water before we have some severe issues impinging upon us biologically. In verse 23, when they came to Marah, they could not drink the water because it was bitter, and therefore it was named Marah. So if you ever wonder what Marah means, it means kind of bitter. So the idea here is it wasn't drinkable water. It could have been salt water, could have been brackish, could have been poison for all we know. It was undrinkable. So they finally go 3 days, they find water, and they can't drink it. I can imagine how frustrating that is, right? Verse 24. And the people grumbled against Moses. I love that word. So strong in the English, the idea of grumbling towards someone. I don't know what you imagine this to be, but when something kind of goes wrong and there's a person you can blame, either right or wrong, and you kind of look on that person and then your tone kind of drops like this, you're not really saying the words out loud, but you're kind of grumbling under your breath. That's what I imagine, yeah. So we have all these people that have been led by Moses, by God, really, and then they have someone they can blame. We've gone all this way for 3 days in the Red Sea and finally found water and we can't even drink it. Can you imagine how frustrating that is? Well, Moses could, right? Saying, what shall we drink? And he cried to the Lord. So Moses went to the right source, right? Went to the Lord. And the Lord showed him a log in the ESV. The King James, I believe, says tree. The idea is a piece of wood. Whenever I read this, it's kind of always fascinating that the Lord could have done anything to make this water drinkable in a miraculous way. If he can part the Red Sea and have them walk through on dry ground, he could have just said, boom, drinkable, go ahead and do it. Or now your bellies are full of water, you're good to go. But instead, he used a device. He used something to make it obvious that this is a special, miraculous moment. Moses threw it into the water, and the water became sweet, or drinkable. Now, not Coca-Cola, but it was drinkable. That's the idea. Whenever I read this, I remember a sermon that I wrote about this particular text. And in that sermon, I drew a parallel. You have that which is undrinkable, unusable, worthless, if you will, bitter water. And the Lord uses a tree or a piece of wood to overcome that obstacle. The parallel you probably draw is pretty simplistic. We, in our sin, needed a piece of wood to transform us into a child of God. Of course, the cross is the implication. We see here, there's a moment where they finally got to a frustrating moment, and instead of, you know, thinking about the silver lining or what the Lord was going to do for them, no doubt, they resented it and they grumbled against their leadership. The next clause here in verse 25, there the Lord made for them a statute and a rule, and there he tested them. So they're testing each other is kind of what's going on here. Any dynamic when you have this kind of relationship, a covenant, you have both sides kind of wondering where the other party is. You have the people not thinking God's going to come through this time, although he's come through every other time. And then you have the Lord saying, are they going to trust me or not? When they finally get to that moment of frustration, are they going to realize the Lord's still with them through Moses? So verse 26, saying, if you will diligently listen to the voice of the Lord your God, and do that which is right in his eyes, and give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you that I put on the Egyptians. What? Did you read that? Did you hear it at least? That kind of comes out of nowhere, right? We're not talking about diseases in this context at all. But all of a sudden, the Lord's kind of letting them know the same guy, the same God who gave all the Egyptians those diseases can do the same to you. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, we learn later. Knowing who we're talking about is very, very important. Many people have the impression that God is full of grace and mercy and peace and love, and all of that is absolutely true. But the reason why I'm preaching this particular series is to remind me and to remind all of us that the same God who loves us and is full of grace and mercy got to a point where he said, enough is enough. That's the fear of the Lord. Okay, let's keep reading. I won't do it for the Lord, for I am the Lord, your healer. I want to bless you. I want to heal you. I want to give you all these prosperous things, but to be able to have it, you've got to trust God. You have to have that faith, right? Verse 27, then they came to Elim, where there were 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees. I doubt it was literally 12 and 70, but the numbers just sound so much more biblical when they're that round, right? And they encamped there by the water. So they were thirsty. The Lord sent them to a bitter place. He turned that bitter water into sweet water and then took them right there to an oasis, right? They were comfortable then. That was kind of their moment where they should have been, you know what? Right, that was our bad. We should have trusted God. Let's move forward. And then chapter 16. Well, they got water. That's good. But food is another thing entirely, right? Chapter 16, verse 1. Then they set out from Elim, and all the congregation of the people of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, of course, of the 15th day of the second month after they had departed from the land of Egypt. And the whole congregation of the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron. So it's not just Moses now. His brother gets part of the credit too. In the wilderness. And the people of Israel, verse 3, said to them, would that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt. All right, here we go again. This is going to get kind of redundant as we move on. It's the same thing every time, basically. I wish we could go back to Egypt and just die. Why bring us all the way out here and kill us, right? That's the complaint. And I guess I can kind of sympathize with that a little bit. But it just seems so melodramatic to me when I read it. That it's kind of almost humorous, right? When we sat by the meat pots and ate bread to the full, they were also slaves, right? So, I mean, it wasn't all good back in the land of Egypt, right? Y'all with me? Okay, just making sure. For you have brought us out into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. Man, melodramatic. So again, the problem, I get it. They're hungry. We look back at this and we kind of laugh because, well, of course they should have trusted in God and had faith. If he made them cross through the Red Sea, no problem. If they gave them sweet water to drink and an oasis there with the palms that were there, everything is good. They should have trusted in God. That's not how they saw it, right? That's not how we see it either sometimes. I remember one time, this is a side story. Let me think it through. I should say it. Okay, it was not this congregation, but I was preaching one time, and it was a Sunday night or Sunday evening worship. And normally sermons are like, what, 20 to 30 minutes? If they're good, 35 maybe. If it's not good, it can go 40, 45, go to an hour, right? Just keep rolling, right? To see what happens. Well, I had a really great sermon. I thought so anyway. And I preached that night and it ended up being 40 minutes. It was a lengthy text. I had a lot of points to make and people were on board for the first like 30 minutes. The last 10, I can see people sleeping, heads thrown back. People was Sunday night, right? So I get it. People are tired. I get it. I totally get it. I've been in the pew before. I have heard a lot of long, boring sermons. I get it. At the end, I thought I did a great job. I had a response for the invitation. Everything was going great. And then I got pulled by the eldership, and they said, listen, we appreciate you preaching tonight to fill in for our regular guy. If you ever preach that long again, you're never coming back here. That's not hyperbole. They literally said, if you don't preach a 20-minute sermon, you'll never preach here again. And I didn't. I learned that if I went over 20 minutes, I felt a little weird, right? A little vibe. And so my first work after this location took place, they asked me in the meeting, the interview meeting, how long do you preach? 23 and a half minutes. And they all chuckled like you just did. And I go, I'm dead serious. I stop at 23 and a half minutes or I can't come back there again. So anyway, thankfully I'm a bit more loose now. So the point was, I get it. It's frustrating, right? They're there. They're hungry. I'm keeping you from lunch. So I get it. I understand what's happening here. But their reaction was, we should just go back to Egypt because we had food there. Yeah, I mean, I guess if you want to be slaves again and just like die, I mean, that's not the point. The Lord wants to give you your own land. He wants to be your God. He wants to bless you and they land flowing with milk and honey. God's got this, but they weren't in that mindset. Verse 4, the Lord said to Moses. You don't even see that Moses going to the Lord here. The Lord just goes to him and says, behold, I'm about to rain bread, which is an amazing way to say it. I mean, just what an awesome way to describe this. I'm about to rain bread from heaven for you. I mean, to me, that's so cool. The Lord's like, you want bread? I can make it rain bread. You want rain bread? Is that what you want? Okay, here we go. The people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day. Okay, the Lord could have said, like, here's a week's worth, just ration it out. He's going to give it to them every day except the Sabbath or the rest, right, our Saturday. He's going to give them one day at a time, which, I mean, you see where I'm going with this. Give us this day our daily bread, our Lord said. That's the focus. Don't worry about tomorrow, because tomorrow has enough trouble waiting for you. Worry about today. So we have children at home, as you guys probably know. And, I mean, kids, they teach you a whole lot, don't they? And one of the things I've learned is if I had a dollar for every time my wife said, or Melissa said, one thing at a time to our four-year-old, like I'd be a millionaire. Because everything is one thing at a time. Don't worry about step 10, worry about step 1, right? Same kind of concept being drilled into the brains of the Israelites and for us here. One thing at a time, one day at a time. Okay, keep reading here. That I may test them, whether they will walk in my law or not. On the sixth day, when they prepare what they bring in, it'll be twice as much as they gather daily. Do you know I like Chick-fil-A? I mentioned that before to you publicly. Do you like Chick-fil-A? Yeah, it's the Lord's food, right? Of course it is. So they're closed on Sundays. What are you going to do? You buy two sandwiches on Saturday, and you put one in your fridge. On Sunday for lunch, you take it out, and you put the bread in your toaster, and then you microwave the chicken. Here you go. Chick-fil-A sandwich on a Sunday. Same concept here, right? On their Friday, they would go and get twice as much. So for their rest day, they'd have food for the next day. Verse 6. So Moses and Aaron said to all the people, at evening you shall know that it was the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt. And in the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, because he's heard your grumbling against the Lord. Who are they grumbling against? Moses and Aaron. Who are they really grumbling against? The Lord. For what are we that you grumble against us? He's like, listen, we're not God. If you're grumbling against me, you're grumbling against God. Verse 8, and Moses said, when the Lord gives you in the evening meat to eat, and in the morning bread to the full, because the Lord has heard your grumbling, that you grumble against him, what are we? Your grumbling is not against us, but against the Lord. Then Moses said to Aaron, say to the whole congregation of the people of Israel, come near before the Lord, because he has heard your grumbling. And as soon as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the people of Israel, they looked towards the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. And the Lord said to Moses, I have heard the grumbling of the people of Israel. Say to them, at twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread. Then you shall know that I am the Lord your God. They were hungry, so God gave them food. Verse 13, and in the evening quail came and covered the camp, and in the morning dew laid around the camp. And when the dew had gone up, there was on the face of the wilderness a fine flake-like thing, fine as frost on the ground. When the people saw it, they said, what is it? Which is Hebrew, manna. What is it? Because they didn't know what it was. And Moses said, it's the bread the Lord's given you to eat. This is what the Lord has commanded. Gather of it, each of you, as much as he can eat. You shall take an omer, according to the number of persons that each of you has in his tent. And the people of Israel did so. They gathered some more, some less. But when they measure it with an omer, whoever gathered much had nothing left over. Whoever gathered little had no lack. Each of them gathered as much as they could eat. And then verse 19, Moses said to them, let no one leave any of it over until the morning. So finish it all, right? They did not listen to Moses. They left part of it until the morning, and it bred worms and stank. Which is a great thing to read from the Bible. It bred worms and stank. And Moses was angry with them. Morning by morning, they gathered it, each as much as he could eat. When the sun grew hot, it melted. And then, of course, on the sixth day, they gathered up all of it to for the next day. Here's the point. They needed food. They needed water. They should have trusted in God to provide that for them. But when they got tested, they failed each time. And then the application for all this should be pretty obvious. In my life, when I get to a moment when I have a point where I could just leave it to God to solve the issue, to trust in him and have faith, or I could complain and grumble and doubt, the obvious choice should be the one that I take, to trust in God and to learn from their mistakes. As we continue on, it's going to be rinse and repeat. We're going to be doing three next week to kind of get through these in a timely manner. But hopefully the point is being made that the Lord is full of grace and full of mercy. And yet here are times where they failed the test of God. Let's rise to that occasion. If anyone has a need to respond to the invitation, please come forward now as we stand and we sing.